Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Here we go with the best of the Joe Show, running back some of the best audio you've heard on this radio station over the past 24 hours. Hopefully you are happy, healthy, wealthy, and wise, at least healthy though. I am healthy. That's about it. Wealthy, wise, happy. I am happy. I'm happy and healthy. And that's a lot these days. That's like being wealthy, but not like being wise. Nonetheless, I am Dan Day. Follow me on Twitter. Honestly, after that intro, going to be an interesting follow at Dan Day Radio. I've been putting up the song of the Dan Day every single day to kind of get you through this outbreak while you're cooped up, a little respite from it all, at least 3-4 minutes at a time. I post all types of other craziness, so get at it at Dan Day Radio. On the way, going to be hearing from the Joe Rose Show. They're going to be talking with Zoo Miami's Ron McGill. Tiger King is on everybody's watch list. Ron McGill weighs in. Also, the Dan Le Batard Show, talking with one of the greatest sack fly hitters of all time, Craig Counsell, then Hawk and Crowder Sports, and then peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Something better than peanut butter and jelly? Headlines. Tua Tagovailoa says he is 100% healthy and can play next season. The NFL draft is scheduled for April 23rd through the 25th. Jimmy Johnson has selected Troy Aikman as his presenter when he enters the NFL Hall of Fame. The ceremony is scheduled for August 8th. Both Wimbledon and the British Open have been canceled. This is the first time either has been scrapped since World War II. Video has surfaced of Lamar Jackson tossing practice passes to Antonio Brown. Brown remains unsigned. The Dolphins have signed punter Matt Hack to a restricted free agent tender. Hack has a 44.7 yards per punt average over the past 3 years in Miami and is expected to make $2.13 million next season. And now we take a step into the day spa. Turkmenistan is denying the existence of the COVID-19 outbreak. The Eastern European former Soviet satellite has banned the mention of coronavirus, and if you wear masks in public, you can be sent to jail. Denial. It isn't just a river in Turkmenistan. A rogue gang of mountain goats continues to wreak havoc on a Welsh town. Great. If we can't get this under control, how are we going to stop coronavirus? After going off-road near Dallas, an 18-wheeler had its load of toilet paper burn up and destroyed. No! Okay. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's get into some of the Joe Rose Show. This morning they got up early with Mr. Ron McGill. I would say he's the true Tiger King, but I don't want to say that bad of stuff about Ron McGill. Although Ron McGill has plenty of bad stuff to say about Tiger King. Also, his takes on Joe Exotic, Doc Antel, Carol Baskin. Not so much of a take on the guy here in Miami that's in Tiger King. I can kind of see why. Guy was basically Scarface, and what zoos can do in the wake of Tiger King.
Did you get to see the whole Tiger King? Did you watch all the episodes?
I watched the whole thing. The first day it came out, I binge watched the whole series. Yes, I did. What a train wreck.
White trash at its best. I tell you, I feel proud to be white right now, man, with watching that. I mean, so Ron, I guess the thing is, first of all, before we get into all the stuff, did you have any idea that the three characters in this show, the three different locations, have most of the tigers in the friggin' world? I had no idea.
No, not just those three locations. I mean, what they're saying is most of the tigers in the world are in captivity, not just by those three people. They kind of blew that a little out of proportion. Now, they have many more tigers than they should have by any stretch of the imagination. As a matter of fact, you know, people like that Joe Exotic guy shouldn't even be raising crickets. I mean, that guy is just out of his flipping mind. I've never seen such a basket case in my life. I mean, if you wrote that stuff, Joe, and you submitted it to a screenwriter, they'd laugh you out of the room. Get out of here. That is so ridiculous. And then you realize it's real life. You watch that series, and the first show, you go, oh, my God, this is amazing.
each show, it gets worse. It gets worse. This can't get any worse, and it does.
It's so funny because he is. I think he's a piece of crap for the record. In 22 years, first of all, he drained his parents out all their money. We didn't even talk about that.
He's a user. He's a pedophile. It's just a basket case in every sense of the term. You know what he did with those animals and the way he exploited those animals for his own benefit. I was just sitting.
So let me ask, when I see those guys selling those little cubs and stuff, who takes them? Do zoos take them, or do they go as pets
to
other people?
That's the thing that really ticked me off about this series, the fact that they didn't go interview any credible zoo professional who's really doing great work and great conservation work. These guys, what they're doing is they're ripping babies away from their mothers just to be able to take pictures with them to make money off the whole thing, which is horrific in and of itself. And then, you know, there's some very sincere speculation that once many of those tigers reach an age where they can no longer make money for them or take pictures safely, they kill them. They just get rid of them. They're a disposable commodity. They're not looked at as a living thing. They're looked at as a number as to what you can make from me. And, you know, there were scenes in that series, that scene where you see them reaching with a broomstick and pulling the baby away from the mother minutes after it's born. It's disgusting. It's disgusting. Right. You know, and this goes without saying. Here's this guy, you know, doing his social media stuff, shooting mannequins and putting rattlesnakes in the mailbox. I mean, this guy is so out of his freaking mind. But on the same side, this woman, Carol Baskins, oh, my God, she's no angel. This woman, as a matter of fact, I just read in the New York Times, they are reopening the case on the missing of her first husband, which I firmly believe she killed or had killed. That woman
I've been saying she's a crazy bitch. There's no question about it. She's out of her freaking mind.
Out of her freaking mind. Every time, I mean, the new meme now is like, hi, my cats and kittens. And I want to throw up every time I hear it because I look at this freaky lady with these little flowers around her hair like she's out of the 60s beatnik thing. Like, oh, peace, love, happiness. And she is such a hypocrite, that bitch.
So Ron, how did she get all the animal lovers behind her? I see all these comments, and she really cares about
it. Joe, what she does is she masters social media, okay? And you, as anybody knows well, social media is... it's the toilet bowl of the internet. What you're able to do is you get people to believe anything you say because you can say anything without having to be accountable for it. Now, I know people, I've personally never been to a place, but I know people, credible people who have been to a place and say, oh my God, the facilities behind the scenes that you don't see are a total crap hole. I mean, it's just disgusting, you know? And she's saying how she's rescuing all these tigers. No, that tiny minority of the cats she has there are rescues. Other ones are the ones that she bought, okay? So she's part of the problem. She's part of the problem because she's exploiting those animals for people to come see her to do this thing. Now, do I agree with her that people should not be owning big cats like pets? Absolutely. But that's what she's doing in many ways. Speaking out of both sides of her mouth. And it's just ridiculous to see that. These guys who are just perpetuating this myth that they're conserving these animals is a bunch of crap. They're exploiting them for every possible way they can.
Yeah, I was curious how you guys felt who do things the right way and care and not pulling away and not selling and the whole thing. What about this third guy who's also, he kind of got he was the third guy,
Antle.
Yeah. What kind of guy is he? Is he a sleazebag too?
Well, listen, I've met Doc on several occasions. I've spoken to him. You know, he sent a book that he signed to me and stuff like that. Doc Antle, to put it in one term, is a cult leader. Okay. That guy has got his own cult. He's like the Jim Jones of tigers and animal people, in the sense that what he does is, in my personal opinion, he lures in attractive women to which he's quote unquote married to several of them. Uses this lure of the animals. Oh my God, come on, you want to be part of this? Be part of this magic? All he's doing again is he's using these animals to get social media hits. You know, he's the guy that has these social media, these YouTube videos of the baby chimp bottle feeding a baby tiger, stuff like that. I mean, this is just ridiculous stuff. Yes, does it appeal to the public? Do they get the social media hits? Absolutely he does, because it's like everybody has this misconception. Oh, this is so cute. Look, the chimp loves the tiger, and he's become the tiger's mother. That's a bunch of crap. He's been trained to hold the bottle while the tiger sucks the bottle, but the tiger's freaking
right.
Hungry. And people like to be anthropomorphic about that. They like saying, oh, geez, look at that. There's so much love. It's kumbaya. Why can't more people be like this? And he's sucking them into that vortex. He knows that. The guy's a very smart guy. But at the same time, he's also exploiting these animals to make a profit. He's the kind of guy who rents, you know, elephants to walk in parades, to rent camels to do the same thing, to take pictures of all these models. He's always kind of trying to combine, you know, his girls dressed up like little Tarzanettes with their little minimum clothing and doing their little routines and going into the water and swimming with them. so ludicrous. And I'm hoping that this, because of all the attention this series is getting, that people are going to open their eyes and go, hey, stop it. My big fear, though, Joe, is that people are going to look at this and say, well, that's what all zoos are like. And that couldn't be further from the truth. And on the same note, I want to say this. There are some, it's certainly a minority, but there are some private individuals who work with exotic animals who do incredible work breeding them. And there are some good ones, okay? The majority of these people are not good ones. The majority of these roadside attractions, these horrible, but I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. There are some people that really do great work, raise money for conservation, send a lot of money to conservation. You know, accredited zoos have learned from them on how to maintain these animals, husbandry techniques, how to best get them to reproduce, to preserve a species. But at the same time, accredited zoos aren't breeding things like tigers on a run like that. Our lions, for instance, they're all on birth control. Our chimpanzees, they're all on birth control because we don't have a place to put them. Zoos have what's called an SSP, a species survival plan. It's all these accredited zoos work together to make sure that every baby that's born has a place in another accredited institution, to make sure it doesn't end up in somebody's backyard as a pet, to make sure that it doesn't end up, in some circus or something like that, or some, God forbid, a canned hunting farm or something like that. These other people are breeding these animals just for profit. Zoos don't breed for profit. Zoos breed to supply other zoos because we don't take animals out of the wild, and they work to try to educate and send that money back to conservation in the wild. You won't see a zoo, an accredited zoo, taking a tiger and giving photo opportunities with people to hold a tiger, or taking, a chimpanzee to go do a commercial for television. You won't see accredited zoos doing that because it's morally wrong.
Do you have any, I just wanted to ask Ron if he had any interaction with the guy, the Scarface guy in Miami. Like, have you ever met that guy?
I actually know him very well, very well. As a matter of fact, I started working for him, about 30 something years ago when he was bringing animals in. And I got to be honest with you, I learned a lot from him, for his husbandry techniques. The guy knows how to care for animals. Having said that, I've distanced myself from him considerably over the last several years because of the fact of what he was doing with animals. You know, he's got a chimpanzee that he's hand raising that he uses to take photo ops, and he charges a lot of money to take those photo ops. And though, I learned a lot from him. He was very good to me, taking aside, the crimes that he committed in the drug trade way back when. But he was right. But our philosophies are very different. And he knows that, and he knows why I distanced myself from him, because I said, listen, guys, I want to make it clear. When I was young, I was probably part of this problem. When I was a 20-something-year-old guy, man, I loved playing with those tiger cubs. I loved, working with these lions and all this stuff when they were younger and doing these things and doing the television programs. And then I got to a point in experience and knowledge that I realized this was wrong, and that's where I stopped it. That's why I said, I can't do this any longer. It's the wrong thing to do. Education is power, and that's given me the power to understand that. I just wish that all these people would get on the program and understand the same thing.
By the way, Ron, maybe the sleaziest thing, and there was a lot of sleaze. It's out sleazy. There was so much sleazy stuff. It's hard to rank them. But this piece of crap, Jeff Lowe, took over. That guy, I want to punch him in the face. This guy taking these little baby tigers to Vegas to get laid, to have sex with all these women, because these women apparently like, oh my God, you're getting it. You're getting anything you want if I can take this picture this.
And that's exactly right, Joe. Like I said, when I was a young man back in my 20s and I was, holding tiger cubs, it was a woman magnet. I mean,
why didn't you tell me that when I was younger? Like when I was running around higher than a freaking kite, I was in half those movies where that cocaine was, and you never told me.
Well, I got to tell you, Joe. I said, when I was raising those baby animals, there was no desperation for women, and it wasn't because of me, Joe. Because I could have looked like Cyclops. It wouldn't have made a difference. They see the baby animal, and it's like, oh my God. So I understand the allure, but you got to get over that. And I'm ashamed that I did that in my younger years. But I've got to stand by myself and say, listen, can't do that any longer. I got to try to teach people the right thing to do now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about all the zoos, the big zoos, the good ones. Do they feel the same way you do about all this stuff when they see that? Do they find it to be pathetic
It's disgusting. It's absolutely sickening. And like I say, I think I speak on behalf of almost all accredited zoos when they say, God, I wish they would have taken the time to distinguish the difference between these roadside crap holes to an accredited institution that has such a high bar to meet to make sure the animals are cared for, to make sure you're not carelessly breeding any animals, the strict birth control programs that we put into place to make sure we don't have any unwanted babies. You know, this, the fact that we never pull animals from their mothers unless the mother is sick and can't care for the animal, or the animal needs some kind of immediate medical attention. The last thing you want to do is take a baby away from its mother. It's the most horrible thing you could want to do. These people just do it as part of their natural routine.
I mean, Ron, if all this stuff was going on, and obviously it was going on for a pretty long time, how come nobody...
Still going on.
Right, but how come no one from the government has gotten involved in this and really made this a big... I mean, I know that it's an animal thing, so maybe a lot of people are not saying that's on the forefront, but God, after seeing this and not really knowing much about it before this, except for I'm sure there's people out here who did it, man, how come no one else really stepped in and did anything about this, or are people trying to? Like, it's crazy.
I think people definitely have been trying to, but I think now that is going to be the silver lining of this crap show.
Right.
Is that it's brought so much attention now. It's got so much attention on social media. People are going to say, how can we put up with this? How can we stand for this? We got to close this stuff down. We've got to be more vigilant and making sure this does not happen. It came to a little bit of a head when that incident happened in Ohio where that guy let go of everything that ended up having to be shot, and then he killed himself.
Right.
People were saying, what? This guy had lions, tigers, and bears in his backyard in the middle of Ohio? What the hell is going on in this world? And it was a wake-up call. Now, I'm hoping that this series and the amount that it's getting over, publicity it's getting on social media, is going to be another wake-up call. And people are going to say, enough. We got to pass some laws and be more vigilant about this.
So are there, you tell me there's a lot of people out there that, like, own a tiger?
Joe, right here in our own state, Joe, there are hundreds of people owning tigers and lions and leopards and things like that as personal, quote-unquote, pets that they keep in their yard. All they have to do is get a permit, and the permit is given to them. If they've proven they've had, you know, I think it's like 1,000 or 10,000 hours of experience working with these animals, and they have a minimal cage that meets the minimum requirements set up by the state, which to me are not enough at all. It's like giving people a license to have a ton of machine guns and not understand the power of the machine guns. It's a tragedy waiting to happen.
Well, I didn't know if you were going to come on and how you felt about it today, but I think you made it pretty clear how disgusting it is.
I'm livid about it. It's disgusting, but at the same time, I'm happy it's getting all of this attention. Because I haven't spoken to one person yet who goes, oh man, that was really cool.
It's the most dysfunctional white trash, as even the great former running back O.J. Simpson said. It's white trash at its best, man.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty bad. Hey, Ron, thank you, buddy.
I got one more for Ron.
What else you got?
Ron, can a tiger devour a human body, bones and all, and have no kind of nothing left over after that? Can a tiger do that?
A tiger could do that. Yes, a tiger could do
really?
That.
I'm trying to be an investigator.
No, can ask him point blank. Ask him.
Right.
Did Carol Baskin friggin' have him whacked? The guy had a lot of money, and he's been missing for 5 years.
My gut feeling is absolutely she had him whacked. And like I said, I just read in the New York Times that now the Tampa Sheriff's Office has reopened the investigation into this guy's loss. Whether she fed him to the tigers, I don't know. But I'm sure she had him whacked and had the body disposed of in such a way that he could never be found. Come on, look at the facts in that documentary. They found a new will that she was the executor to with after his personal assistant for many years says, no, that wasn't the case. And he was trying to get rid of her, get away from her. Okay? Oh, wow, how coincidental. Let's take a rocket scientist, guys.
No,
and then
I'm
look at her. Hello, cats and kittens.
Oh,
how are you?
Oh,
God bless.
That guy, by the way.
Weekend.
All right. Hey, Ron, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Great there, man. Bye-bye.
Ron McGill, a passionate guy. Like I said, don't want to call him the Tiger King. Woo. Tiger King, a lot of people are going crazy about it. Being from Louisiana, this is just kind of how people are, you know? I'm glad to be here in South Florida. And if that Scarface guy is listening, Dan Le Batard Show. They're not. They're excited next because former Marlin Craig Counsell joins the show. Keep it tuned for that. This is the Best of the Joe Show. The Best of the Joe Show, running back some of the best audio you've heard on this radio station over the past 24 hours. I am Dan Day. Lots of quarantine and chill these days. Quarantine and chill. Although I have been coming into the radio station at like 4 in the morning and working all morning long just because we've got some staffing issues. No worries. Glad to be here. Glad to be here every day, not just because of times. Good times, bad times, they're all good and great when you walk into these radio station doors. 560 The Joe, WQAM. Dan Le Batard Show, always doing it great, even if things aren't exactly great in the world. They're feeling great because they caught up with former Marlin Craig Counsell talking about the greatest sack fly ever, Marlins championship glory. Honestly, seems like Craig Counsell doesn't remember much from those glory days, and on doing his job even as the worst player on the field.
I just discovered, as we were talking during the break, that Chris and Billy might not be able to hear Craig Counsell right now. So I'm going to have to set this up for Craig Counsell so that he understands what it is and how excited we are to have him and why it is we're so excited to have him. Billy and Chris have alleged yesterday that the greatest sack fly in baseball history of our most historic sport was in 1997 by Craig Counsell. Now, what would you guys like to say to Craig Counsell? He is there. Billy, you begin the bidding. What is it that you want to say? Because you're very excited about this right here.
He understands.
I just want to thank Craig Counsell for the memories. I want to thank him for making me cry and not having his sacrifice fly until the ninth inning, as opposed to maybe producing a little more in the eighth. I want to tell him that if it wasn't for his sacrifice fly, Craig Counsell, I may have had to wear my school uniform to school the next day instead of my Marlins clothes. So thank you for joining us and welcome.
You know, the impact that sack fly made, it's starting to really hit home now. I get it.
Would you believe, and they can't hear him, would you believe that Craig Counsell had not seen that game until yesterday? I couldn't believe when you said that, Craig, and thank you for joining us. I couldn't believe when you said that you hadn't re-seen that game until 2 days ago.
No, I haven't. It's true. I'd seen the sack fly, you know, I'd seen kind of scoring the winning run, but like other parts of the game, no idea what it looked like and no memory of it at all.
No memory of it? No. How is that possible? Just because it was too intense?
Well, I mean, you'd come up to bat, and I was watching it with my kids, and they'd say, "What happens here, Dad?" And I said, I don't know what happens. Pretty good chance I make an out because that was regular, but I didn't know what happened.
Wait a minute. That doesn't seem like that could possibly be real, that you got so lost in the moment that you don't remember any of the details.
No, it's 23 years ago. I mean, you forget that stuff. You remember the kind of the good stuff, but I don't remember the details at all.
Chris, what do you have for Craig Counsell, Chris?
Oh my God, this is such an honor. When I think of Craig Counsell, I think of my childhood. Not only does he have the best sack fly of all time, he also has a top five batting stance of all time. When he got those hands really high up, I mean, just fantastic. Craig, do you feel like your sack fly was overlooked and too much attention was paid to you scoring the game-winning run?
No, I don't. I mean, like, I think when I was up in this situation, honestly, you're like, just don't lose the World Series. I mean, we were down 2-1 when I was up there. So when I tied the game, I felt like, you know, you did your job. So I was happy to be part of the story. I still feel like I was the worst player on the field. I learned that again watching the game the other night. I was by far the worst player on the field. So I was thrilled to do my part. And no, I mean, the sack fly was, you know, it was just part of the story. It's when the game got really good, really.
You were the worst player on the field when Greg Zahn was on the field.
For the first nine innings, for sure.
Billy, what do you have for Craig Counsell and his sacrifice fly?
Well, yeah, so I'm just kind of wondering what's going through your head. So you're coming in, you're down one run, runner on first, runner on third, Billy Gill in the upper deck crying. And you know, it's go time here. We have one out. Are you going in thinking, hey, I need to hit a sacrifice fly here? Like, was that the call? Like, you got the whatever the sign was where they touched the elbow and the nose and it's like it's sack fly time? And were you worried that you got too much of it? Because it went close to the warning track. And I'm wondering, if you hit a walk-off home run there, do you think you're a failure if you're going out there for a sacrifice fly?
I did not get the sack fly sign. I was hoping I didn't get the bunt sign. I didn't want to have to bunt there. You're worried. It was first and third, right? So there was one out, first and third. We're losing 2-1. I think this is what people don't understand. Like, my first thought was I could lose the World Series if I hit into a double play. That's not good sports psychologist talk.
So
but I,
negative.
That's probably real.
Counsell.
It's what human, man. That's what happens to you.
That runs contrary to what greatness is supposed to be in those moments throughout the history of time. You're supposed to imagine success, not the worst-case scenario.
I got it out of my head, and then I said, you know, and then I said, I'm swinging. Like, no matter what, I'm swinging, because I'm not going to, this is like, then I got the kind of positive stuff in my head where, like, this is the at-bat, like, every kid dreams of thought in my head. And so I said, I'm swinging, and if something bad happens, it's going to be because I swung.
All right, we've got a lot of questions. First question, though, before anything else, is it okay to you that Billy began crying in, before you're at bat, that Billy in the stands, he was watching this, and he started crying in the eighth inning as a Marlins fan. Is that okay?
I think it is, man. I mean, he was in it, man. He was all over the game. It was like the most important thing in the world to him. That's the beauty of this, right? That's the beauty of sports, for sure. I mean, I don't know if his parents were had to put up with him crying for about an hour. That might have been a little bit of a pain, but
too early. It was too early to be crying. Chris, what do you have? What do you have for Craig Counsell?
When I rewatched Game 7 a couple nights ago, one of the funny things I learned was seeing Craig Counsell's reaction. Because as soon as the ball is caught, he turns around real fast to look at Moises Alou running home. And you kind of see him give a, hurry up, as if Moises Alou, because the ball was hit so deep, was kind of just taking his time. And you see Craig like, go, go. So I'm wondering if you remember being a little frustrated with Moises Alou saying, like, come on, this is a big run. Can you hurry up here?
I was. That's you got it. You nailed it. I wanted him to go. I mean, I knew he was going to score, but it was like, hey, I did my job. Let's just make sure, you know, the run scores. So I didn't, again, it was a little bit of like, hey, you just want to do your job. And, you know, it was, Mo didn't have to run hard, but I would have preferred that he scored like the second I hit it. That's what I was doing. I was saying, like, get home. So make sure I did my job.
Oh, you thought it was still going to be a double play somehow. Billy, what do you have for Craig Counsell?
In my defense, and I think Craig can attest to this, when your team, you're fielding Jim Eisenwright, John Cangelosi, and Craig Counsell, and you're facing the 1995 Rolaids Relief Man of the Year in Jose Mesa, it looks like things are pretty hopeless.
I would agree. Things. No, I mean, Jim Eisenreich was a really good hitter. He was an outstanding hitter. You know, the other guys did their job, and so I didn't have to get a hit. I just had to put a ball, get the sac fly sign, like you said. But I joked about, like, the worst guy in the field. But, like, when you look at the players that were on the field for those, for, like, the World Series games and, like, Game 7 of World Series games, man, they're great players. And so the Indians lineup was, like, every dude in the lineup was either in the Hall of Fame or has gotten votes for the Hall of Fame. So it's
Tomy was batting sixth. They seventh, told me this, Dan. Yesterday that Tomy was batting. You said seventh, Stugott?
Manny was batting third. Tomy was batting seventh in that lineup.
Jim Tomy was batting seventh. Hold on a second. Billy and Chris, give me a thumbs up if you have more questions and would like another segment before I ask Craig Counsell to stay for another segment about his sacrifice fly. Do you guys have enough questions that you want him to continue on with us here? Okay, we got thumbs up here. Counsell, you want to stay for another segment and answer a bunch more sacrifice fly questions?
I'm in.
When sacrifice flies are hit, this show shows up 23 years later to do the interrogation. We have a lot of questions about Craig Counsell's sacrifice fly in 1997. Chris, what else did you have for the manager of the Brewers about a sac fly that he barely remembers because he was scared and thought he was going to hit into a double play?
Craig was a young player at this time, and as he said in the last segment that he felt like he was the worst player on the field. And I'm wondering if before that last at bat, where you had, not your last at bat, but before the at bat with the big sack fly, were you worried that Jim Leland was going to pinch hit for you and replace you with Alex Arias?
That's a great question. That's Alex Arias, great name. No, I was confident that Kurt Abbott had already hit, I think, when watching the game. I think I saw Kurt Abbott hit like in the sixth to the seventh. He was usually the guy that hit for me. So I felt like I had the rest of that bat.
Hold on a second. Stugatz, what are you laughing about there? Are you just laughing about the name Kurt Abbott? Because it is not as funny as the name Alex Arias. You are totally wrong if you think that Kurt Abbott is a funnier name than Alex Arias.
No, I'm laughing at Arias. I'm laughing at Abbott. I'm laughing at Counsell feeling secure knowing that Abbott had already gotten a bat. Like, I'm laughing at all of it. I mean,
all right, Mike is furious in the background demanding that we put it on the poll. Okay, funnier name, Kurt Abbott or Alex Arias. Billy, what do you have for Craig Counsell?
Well, this is something, Craig, that's always bothered me, because you did, obviously, your time with the Marlins. You won the World Series, which obviously wasn't very impactful in your life because you don't seem to remember any of it. And then you went to the Diamondbacks and immediately won a World Series with them. And you broke the Marlins record of winning it in 5 years by doing it in 4 years with the Diamondbacks. And, like, that's never kind of sat well with me, Craig. Nothing personal against you, but I feel like you kind of betrayed the Marlins by doing that. And I just want you to tell me that you liked your time with the Marlins better than your time with the Diamondbacks.
You need to hear that, Billy. You do. I loved my time with the Marlins. They ditched me. They ditched me. They ditched me. What are you going to do? So I had to move on.
Look, he's going the other way on that. He's saying he's betrayed and hurt and scorching the earth 23 years later, saying the Marlins betrayed him. And so he went into the loving arms of the Diamondbacks. He's...
Craig, you wouldn't have been in the big leagues. You wouldn't have been in the show if it wasn't for the Marlins.
Council, do you realize how absurd it is that you were the worst player on the field in two Game 7s of the World Series?
I know. It's all come full circle in the last week. I've watched both the games with my family, and I had to confess it to them. And you know, you hold out hope that you were, like, cooler, like 23 years ago. You were cooler than you are now, or that your kids perceive you, and it just hasn't worked out that way.
You hadn't seen the other Game 7 either?
It's the first five innings of the game. I've never spent time watching the first five, six innings of the game. No.
Since you watched that game for the first time and you watched it yesterday, just so you know that since that game, there has been a theory floating around. I'm assuming you watched it with the volume up. Did you get the feeling that Bob Costas was rooting for the Indians and not the Marlins as you watched that Game 7 unfold?
That's a good, I could see that. And I would say because, you know, it wasn't – the Marlins were around for 5 years, so the Indians hadn't won in ever, right, or however long it had been, 100 years. And so it would just been, you know, I think Bob Costas wanted to tell a great historical story, which he probably had lined up, right, and he couldn't tell it.
That's right. But you heard it in his voice. So right. He is confirming it 23 years later that Bob Costas was biased. What else do you have for Craig Council, Chris?
Craig, I've seen it speculated on the internet, in the depths of the internet, that you missed home plate on that game-winning run in the game seven. Is there any truth to it?
On the dark web.
That's dark web. No, that's false. That is false. But I'm sure it's out there. There's no question it's out there. That is false. I do have proof of that.
Craig, thank you for tolerating our inanities. Those guys aren't joking, though, when they say that it's the greatest sack fly in the history of sack flies. Thank you for being on with us, sir.
If you can ask a question about Alex Arias, I'm sure they believe it.
I like Craig Council's candor. I don't know. I sucked. I don't know. They're just doing what I got to do. And the guys at Dan Le Batard going deep. They seem to know more than Craig Council knew, and Craig Council was in the game. I thought that was interesting. Always in the game, Hawk and Crowder. Hawk is at his home in West Palm Beach or something like that. Crowder's in his home over in Davie. Got a raggedy-ass desk, and we're going to hear from them next on the Best of the Joe Show. And we're back on the Best of the Joe Show, running back some of the best audio you've heard on this radio station over the past 24 hours. My name is Dan Day, D-A-N-D-A-Y, and that'll do you some good because every day is a Dan Day, and you can follow me every day on Twitter, at Dan Day Radio. And usually during the day, I'm teaming up with Hawk, Crowder, Solana for the Hawk and Crowder show. But lately, duty calls and I've had to work more mornings. So I've been here early in the morning, going to bed like 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, getting my partying done early. And then on the weekends, really get my partying done early and then just kind of chilling out. You can always chill out, of course, with Hawk and Crowder 3 to 6 here on 560 The Joe. Hey, got some good stuff for you. Crowder is live from his raggedy-ass desk. NFL, Fast and Furious, and so the Dolphins are totally in on that. Got the headlines, plus crunchy or smooth PB&Js.
Getting used to doing this pandemic style. At my house in Boca, Crowder over his raggedy-ass desk in his house in Davie.
You going to keep calling my desk raggedy, huh?
Feel bad for your setup there, man. We're going to do a GoFundMe before the end of the week is out. I do want to get to this, though. I kind of wanted to start the show this way. There is a lot of talk and a lot of information starting to come out regarding the Miami Dolphins
and who they might be looking to draft or how they might be willing to draft. So don't get it twisted. It's April. Even with coronavirus and social distancing and self-quarantining, all that comes with the NFL draft is firing up right now. It's NFL draft season. That means the information is going to start to trickle out, and then it's going to come in a fast and furious manner, and it's going to be up to everyone, us, the listeners, the writers, everyone, to figure out what's good info and what's bad info. So I know we're in this interesting time where we're all working from home, and the NFL draft, really, other than WrestleMania this weekend, is the only game in town. But what started to happen yesterday when Armando said, you know, the Dolphins would be looking to trade all their or trade Cincinnati for the number one pick if they could get it done. And then Adam Schefter comes out yesterday and says the Dolphins may not be as interested in Tua Tagovailoa as people have started to believe. All this information that's coming out, this is what happens every year around draft time, right? This isn't anything new.
It's the game. You got to play the game. If you're not playing the game, you're losing in this time of year. This time of year is the smoke screens, the real information. Yes, you have to shift through it all because every team knows that everybody that calls one of their coaches, they're trying to get information for a reason. They're not trying to tell their grandmother. They're trying to tell somebody else. You got to play the game this time of year.
Right. If Adam Schefter yesterday, which he did, he comes out and he says the Dolphins may not have as much interest in Tua Tagovailoa as people think, that information is coming from somewhere. Now, where is that information coming from? It could be coming from someone within the Dolphins organization because they have a significant interest in Tua Tagovailoa, but they don't want San Diego or Los Angeles to know that so that they don't have to trade up. Like, there's a lot of jockeying. There's a lot of chess playing going on right now. So we're going to try to sift through it all. To me, this is fun. I always love the NFL draft time of year. I love trying to figure out what they're going to do. I love being surprised on draft night when they do whatever they're going to end up doing. So this is all fun, but I do want everyone to understand, it's April. That means the information and the misinformation starts to ratchet up to a level, and we're kind of all off our game a little bit, obviously, because coronavirus has us thinking about other things, worried about other things. So I'm just kind of doing a little heads up. Hey, it's April. It's draft season. These football teams, we know that we're going to get through this pandemic at some point. Is it a month from now, 3 months from now, 12 months from now? I don't know. But at some point, we're all going to get back to our normal lives. And that means NFL general managers are going to have to live with the picks that they made and live with the trades that they made or didn't make. And that's why this time of year is fun. But that's why I warn you again, this is the time of year you're going to hear a lot of information, kind of up to you to sift through it, figure out what's right, what's wrong. And we may not know till draft night.
Yeah, and you have to do stuff like I thought about this with the Dolphins, Hawk, where we needed pass rushers, we needed trenches. But for real pass rushers, Kyle Vannoy, we brought in him. He's a pass rusher. You're bringing Ogba. You're bringing Shaq Lawson. Do we need to draft a pass rusher early? Because that was on the list. Now you bring in Jordan Howard. We needed a running back because we were the worst running team. We needed linemen. We brought in a guard in Eric Flowers and a center in Karras. We still need a tackle, but we don't need a cornerback. What everybody knew, we needed a cornerback because Nick Needham can't be your number two guy on the outside of Xavier Howard. They addressed a lot of problems in free agency other than the quarterback. So now just thinking a little deeper, if I was the Dolphins, every team is saying, oh, they're going to go get Tua. They have to get a quarterback. Why don't we float out something on Burrow? Why don't we float out something on Love? Why don't we float out something on Herbert? Why don't we keep the other people guessing?
Right.
It is chess. You hit it on the head. It's chess. People are looking at acquisitions and trying to figure out your hand. So don't show them your hand. This is poker. This is chess. This is what this time of year is. And Chris Greer, I believe they're playing it right. I don't know where Armando got his information from, but was it a lie or was it the truth? Armando doesn't know, and we don't know.
Yep, we will all find out together. So again, that's kind of my heads up that, hey, it's drafts. Let's get headlines with our own Alejandro Solana. And by the way, you kind of have to sift through whatever info you get from Solana as well, because half of it is misinformation. This is completely unintentional. He's trying to deliver you quality headlines. He's just not good at it.
Bro, he's year-round, though.
Go ahead, Solana.
He's playing the game year-round.
He's always keeping us guessing.
It's a great introduction there for me, Hawk. Thank you. I will start with some serious local news here in South Florida. Just about an hour ago, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, he announced he will be signing an order directing Floridians to stay at home unless they're doing essential activities. The order will go into effect Thursday night.
It's a probably a good move by the governor. A lot of people were wondering what was the delay on this. And really, hopefully everybody is practicing self-quarantine and self-isolation anyway. But yeah, the official order from the governor will be signed and go into effect. Anything else in the headlines, Solana?
Yeah, guys. Major League Baseball has canceled two London-based games between the Cubs and the Cardinals due to the coronavirus outbreak.
All right. Anything else happening?
The All England Club has announced the cancellation of Wimbledon. It is the first time since It is the first time since World War II that Wimbledon is canceled.
I believe you announced that Dumbledore was canceled. What did you say? You said Wimbledon.
I mean, in Uruguay, we pronounce it Wimbledon. So sometimes I get confused.
Wimbledon. He canceled.
Magic.
This dude canceled Dumbledore. All right. What else do you have in the headlines?
Maybe we can get some Quidditch. You think we can get some Quidditch?
Actually, there you go. I'll bet on some Quidditch games. All right. What else do you have, Solana? Wimbledon.
I've been saving that one all day. The four Brooklyn Nets players who tested positive for COVID-19 about a week ago are now symptom-free, GM Sean Marks announced.
Okay. Anything else happening?
Yeah, guys. Big news. Tonight, 9:30 p.m., FS1 is airing The Legend of Josh Rosen.
I didn't know there was a Legend of Josh Rosen.
It's a replay of the 2017 UCLA game when he threw for four touchdowns, 292 yards.
All right.
In a fourth quarter comeback versus
Texas. I thought it was like a documentary on The Legend of Josh Rosen.
Josh was a beast in college. We all forget it because he's not that now. Bro, he was something at UCLA.
He was a gunslinger, man.
Yes.
Finally, guys, today is National Peanut Butter and Jelly Day.
Wow, I did not know that. I love a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Maybe I'll have one during the show. We should have Doug Plagans on from the Florida Panthers Radio Network. Guy loves a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. He's been known to have six or seven of them in a day for a snack.
If I'm in your house and I see crunchy peanut butter, we cannot be friends.
I don't have crunchy peanut butter in the house right now, but I am known, I would say maybe once every 3 years, to get a jar of crunchy peanut butter just to, sometimes I go through an experimental phase. Perhaps you can talk to people in my past.
Got to go with my man, Crowder, right there. I go smooth on the peanut butter. I'm actually going to go home and make some PB&H, peanut butter and honey sandwiches. But it's not going to be so much a sandwich because I can't find bread anywhere, but I have some old tortilla chips. So they're like giant size too. So I'm just going to whip out some creamy, smooth PB, and then pour some honey, then wrap it all up, roll it up like a big old joint, and eat it. And eat it, and eat it, and eat it, and eat it, and eat it. And then what other canned goods or non-perishables I have in my house, probably eat that until I'm full. Then I'm going to take another walk because that's kind of what you do to exercise during coronavirus. And then Ozark. A little bit of Trailer Park Boys and some more Ozark. That is the world that we live in now. Of course, the world that we live in now gives you a chance to still listen to us all the time. So if you want to download this podcast or any of the podcasts for any of the shows in this radio station, maybe they're not as good as the Best of the Joe Show because we are the best. It's in our name. Nonetheless, you can do it wherever you get your podcasts for absolutely free, radio.com app for free, or go to our website for free, WQAM.com. You've got extra time. So I'll rant and rave more on Twitter. Follow me at Dan Day Radio. Appreciate you spending some time with me. Stay distant. But at the same time, keep rocking. This is the Best of the Joe Show. Later, slug.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.